honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
Hello and welcome back to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, we're asking which side of the ball you should sanitise for optimal swing, how you can still average 16.37 in England, even when they're playing eight-a-side. Stokes' rise as Test captain, Dom Bess as England's best spinner, Dave Warner's TikToks, War versus Warne, hailing Robelinda 2, and figuring out what any of this means when you desperately want something to mean anything, but nothing does. It's a huge show back to play through your ears while you figure out how to say nothing on your Zoom call for 3 months straight. Tim Brezen is on the show, Steve O'Keefe is on the show, and Jonathan Wilson is on the show. This week's hashtag AskTGC has come from some of the darkest recesses of your minds, from every corner of the globe in lockdown, except for one from New Zealand, which is about emojis. Go figure that one. Budgiesmuggler.com. In fact, budgiesmuggleruk.com. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm right here in Melbourne with Sam Perry. Pez, hello. It's nice to see you again.
Still got it on those intros, brother.
How you been, man?
Really good.
It's been a minute.
Good to see you in person in Melbourne where you have relocated. Now, Not to give away too much, obviously.
Please.
Around, you know, your location, etc. But here you are living in Melbourne. And who would have thought that? A boy. You are a boy.
Okay. All right.
In a man's body, as all great cricketers are.
Sure.
From Sydney, from a 3K radius of Neutral Bay. Making his way down in Melbourne, crossing the border, which is now closed due to coronavirus. So you're never coming back. Gladys doesn't want you, nor does Peter Volandis.
Yes.
And it's good to see you in person though, man.
Thanks, mate. Well, you would have seen on my Instagram, just a great timing to come down, put little videos really together, good. Just rising cases. And now the border's closed, so I'm here forever.
Mm. We look outside. There is no blue sky to be seen. It's
zero blue
about
sky.
8 degrees, and there's no heating in your house.
It's all looking up.
All looking good.
It's all looking up. What have you been up to?
Not much, mate. I can't say it's as anything as exciting as your life. A lot of people like to get in touch and emphasise the fact that you are the Chop King.
Thanks. Yeah.
And the rig-based selection, etc.
Sure.
For me, just did some guttering on the weekend.
We're living different lives, aren't we?
I'm just a no-good city
still
slicker
friends,
down his luck. I've never done anything like that. I've never got my hands dirty, and I should be ashamed of it, and I am. But over the weekend, I went to Bunnings. I got an extension ladder, pretended I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Got up there. My two-year-old son said, "Dad, be careful. Why are your legs wobbling?" But I felt quite good, you know, getting my hands dirty, getting that sludge out, you know, singing Springsteen songs, talking out the side of my mouth in three octaves lower than my normal register. And here we are today doing a podcast about cricket. Normal.
All right. Well, there's something we need to talk about here and address at the top of the show here, Pez. Over the last little while, you guys out there would have noticed that Dave hasn't been around much. We did the Channel 7 show without him last year, most of the World Cup shows, the podcast last year. We did our Adelaide live show, and a few other podcasts as well without Dave. But his absence has definitely been an extended one over the last little bit. And please believe us when we say that we've seen the questions. We've seen the questions on the internet.
Yeah, and we completely understand why those questions have been asked.
Yeah.
But today we can say something. It's with a lot of sadness that we let everybody know that Dave will no longer be joining us on the Grade Cricketer. We completely understand that people will want to know how this has happened too. In the early part of this year and before the coronavirus hit, we had some discussions with Dave about what contribution he might be able to make towards the future production of the Grade Cricketer. Those discussions, I'm sure everyone will understand, were and will remain confidential. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, we were unable to reach an arrangement which was satisfactory to us all. That said, we are very grateful for Dave's contribution.
Yeah.
We thank him for a ton of amazing memories through the journey. And, of course, we wish him, as I'm sure you guys do, all the very best. We also know that while we've now made this announcement, people may still have more questions because, of course, this is the internet.
It's the internet.
But out of respect for those close to this news, we think the right and decent thing to do is not to make any further public comment about this. That's our plan. What we are going to do is carry on driving this thing. He goes with passion, putting out the best TGC material we can muster. We know there'll be some disappointment at this news, but even so, believe us when we say we're going to do our absolute best to make sure this show goes from strength to strength.
Yeah, and just finishing on that, things like having Steve O'Keefe, Jonathan Wilson and Tim Breslin on the same show. It doesn't happen unless you guys out there care about this greatly. So we sincerely thank you guys for listening as ever and welcome back. And now that cricket's back, we decided to come back as well. And cricket's back in the UK this weekend. What day is it? It's Monday.
It's Monday.
Yeah. Pubs are open again. Yeah. Cricket, the test back as well.
Yeah, there's a game on Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah,
versus West Indies. Actually, it was there was the Stokes versus Butler game on the other day.
Love an inter-club
trial. Yeah, international team trial as well. Obviously, yeah. Australia famously had one.
Mate, headbands everywhere.
Yeah, you really long hair. Yeah, and I was just going to say, I sort of... You think it's good? I feel like Stokes is about to become the 81st test captain of England.
Yes.
And happy for him there, obviously, a gun player.
Good for him.
Well, let's court our UK followers here. yeah, gun player.
New Zealand's
finest. He's less menacing with the long hair, don't you think? I need Stokes with short hair.
Yeah, gritty.
Yeah.
Like you're thinking Beckham with the shaved head.
Kind of. Beckham can do what he likes.
That's a good point. And he does.
I'm not going to be putting Stokes in that bracket.
I know what you mean. I like, because Stokes is, his style of play doesn't suit long hair.
I don't think so. Like when
Dhoni had long hair.
Well, it looks done, you know. Like he's curating it. He's manicuring it. And that's not Ben Stokes' brand.
Okay.
For me. But you
Red
know,
Bull is his brand.
I can't grow hair on top of my head.
sure, you know what I mean?
So yeah, fair play to it. But I was just saying, like, they had an inter-team match.
Yes.
And you know how I was saying earlier that my life is very different to yours. So basically, you came round, I'm just telling you this,
I was
last
there.
Week. And we had a few drinks. And you left a fair while. Like, it'd been a fair while after you left, and I was still up. Wife's asleep. 2-year-old son's asleep. And basically, my wife, like, creeps out. It's near midnight.
Yeah.
I'm not still drinking, I should say.
Right.
But, like,
thank God.
I think she creeps out, and I think she's expecting to, like, see. She's just nervous about what she might see.
Right.
She's expecting to see me in some lurid situation.
What?
And instead, I'm standing at the kitchen bench watching on my iPhone Stokes v. Butler 11. eating a hummus sandwich. I think she was really relieved. I just started giggling when she saw me. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, what am I doing?
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm a 34-year-old man in a hummus sandwich.
How was it?
It was a nice even sandwich. Spread? And the first ball that I saw was Anderson to Denley trapping him LBW. And, this is going to upset Australians. But Anderson over there especially is unbelievable. And
on that, do you reckon Steve Smith's brilliance won the Ashes or Anderson's Achilles? Was it Achilles?
We don't talk about it much, do we? We don't talk about
He's
it
really good.
He's really good.
He's got more wickets than McGrath.
Did you see that footage they put out? You know how the kind of hype footage around, like, players in the Nets now after the Kyrie thing?
Fucking hell, man,
but they had one with Anderson just hooping at absolute miles.
I do like, I mean, cricket, it's obviously a UK game. It was made in the UK because that's the best place to watch cricket. It's the best even contest between bat and ball. Exactly.
Bat v ball.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Obviously, the highlight of that club game was the club game.
Yeah, it was the clubbies.
clubbies game was clubbies. Mark Wood singing Jerusalem.
Yeah.
From the top of the grandstand, then started the old Jimmy chant. I'm into that.
Yeah.
I'm into that. Yeah. Especially when they're not playing Australia, I can get behind that. Although I would like to see the West Indies sweep them. Let's be fair.
Let's be very with Rakim Cornwall leading wicket taker.
Yeah.
And not because of the rig, just because of the areas.
Isn't the average like 20?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Still though. Rig-based selection.
Well, and that's nothing against Rakim. It's literally, that's just the ironclad, unwritten rule of cricket, that if your rig is more, identifiable than your actual statistics, then you'll be known for your rig.
So that's why McGrath was such a good player. club cricket's back, and they're going to play like 8-a-side. Yeah. That's so grim, isn't it?
Really grim.
Although good for a little stats boost, I reckon. Like if you're batting 5, and you've got 8 fielders, and there's a 6-1 field...
At what point is that just last man stands? Like, at what point, and speaking of, you know, England is the home of cricketing dignity.
Okay.
Class-based game, mm-hmm. system. We've talked about that. We've covered this many times before. Is your dignity lost? You know, where's the dignity if you're playing with 8?
If you play club cricket, your dignity's lost at some point.
Fair point. So you're just saying it doesn't matter how many people are there.
Doesn't matter.
If someone tells me ahead of time, guys, it's 8v8, I'm like, get out of here.
Most of the biggest crowds that I've played at in front of has been a village game on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like 40 people at the pub adjacent to the ground. Yeah. Dad still didn't come.
Dad still didn't come. Someone actually wrote into us on Insta earlier today with a picture of Dan Carter.
Oh, yeah.
The rugby union player who's making a comeback to play for the Crusaders.
He played for his club team.
Club team. Well, and the
they won 55-14.
Right. Okay. That was a conceded few. Yeah. And it listed all of his honours, this Instagram, single thing that he's won.
Yeah.
But now what he can add to it is that he was dropped off at the ground by his dad.
that's your number one. That's your number one. Where does this rank? Where does this rank, Dan? Rugby World Cup was pretty good, but...
Yeah. You said there's still Anderson and Broad chat. Who creates this chat? Anderson and Broad still play?
Statistically, they've taken the most wickets in rugby partnership.
We're Aussies. It's going to feel weird to English people for us to be commenting on whether Anderson Broad's...
We'll tell them how to play cricket.
And we will. How to do it.
Were they satisfied, do you reckon, drawing the series with the number one test ranked team? The best team in the world? Do you reckon they were pleased with that? Let's just bank them in the comments.
Yeah, bank them in the comments. I think it's just Anderson and Broad play until Anderson Broad decide they do not want to play.
Mate, where does hand sanitizer fit into this in terms of like hooping the readers, hooping the jukes? I reckon hand sanitizer, 99% germ killer. I reckon it's doing some damage.
I don't. I reckon a lot of people like talking about it.
I like talking about it. I reckon
a lot of people don't know how to move a cricket ball regardless of what you put on it. You could fucking, we talk about putting it in the freezer, putting sandpaper on it, scraping against the gutter, pissing on it.
That was the biggest thing about sandpaper. It didn't even work.
Wax applicator that Kookaburra is talking about. You give that to 98% of bowlers, they still won't move it if you don't know how to position the seam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you when you're giving throwdowns to a guy, usually a high grader, so he knows your name.
Yes.
And you just get bored, and then you're like, I'm going to try and get you out now.
Yeah.
Yorkers. Are you swinging them? I'm trying to find a two-piece from that ball bag somewhere and just going seam up.
It's just cricket, isn't it? Like, giving throwdowns is just one of the most, like, peasantried jobs you can possibly do, and you end up having to find your own fun within it, which is why, like,
when get bored so
when, quickly. When the batter misses one, you contend that's what you meant to do.
Yeah.
You're starting to swing it. It's like when you're throwing the ball from point to cover or whatever. Actually, in fact, if it goes to point, you're playing third grade or lower. You skip point.
I like it.
But you always do it with seam up just to see if you get a bit of wobble.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cover
it's a game
it
within
or,
a game.
Or mid-off takes it. Mid-off's already turned his or her back to give it to the bowler, but you're still making the sign with your fingers that you made it move. Yeah, it's a normal game.
It's completely normal and healthy for the mind and soul and body.
I mean... COVID, he goes, has made this mental dysfunction even worse for cricketers. There's been some desperately disturbing videos. Guys in full kit on treadmills. We're going to get to Rogelinda too in a second.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Guys in full kit on treadmills. Did you see the video of that kid hooping it massively in the backyard to his little brother? Bowling really quick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bowling back of a length.
And just in, out.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Exciting
and there's always someone underneath. He's going, well, mate, you just got to get back and across.
Yeah, get in behind
it. Yeah. It's like that ball's coming at probably about 170 k's just from where he's bowling it. Mm. Anyway.
Well, let's get into Rogelinda too then. Yeah. The man, the myth, the legend. He's the only thing that's keeping us alive.
Yeah.
That and Tiger King.
Yeah.
I reckon.
Didn't watch Tiger King.
It's not too late, mate. You can still get on board with that. But Rogelinda too. I mean, do you have like a one video that keeps popping up in your feed or you go back to of his? Everyone around the world knows who he is, surely.
Yeah, yeah, at this point.
This isn't an Australian thing.
Yeah. Someone tried to claim the other day it was Rogelinda too. He literally cleared that up on our show.
Yeah.
Rogelinda too. Yeah. R-O space.
You're welcome,
R-O
society.
Dash.
Yeah. And we saw, we met Belinda.
That's right.
Or E-Linda. Hmm. Alinda. We met Alinda. Yeah. Okay, I've had a drink.
I know we've had...
You got a favorite?
My favorite generally is just any Warne stuff, but that's boring. Yeah. And then, like, contrary to that, my favorite is Mark Waugh taking down Shane Warne, New South Wales, Victoria.
Good one.
Mark Waugh famously saying that he doesn't have respect for any spinners.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he did disrespect Shane Warne and take him down.
I like the Aussie baiting stuff, which is just trying to get the Indian fans. I'm into that. A lot of Aussies humiliation, disrespect Aussies, that kind of stuff.
That's the best thing and the most understated thing about Rogelinda too is that his discrimination is actually equal of all countries, especially in caps.
Yeah, yeah, all I caps, love it. Exactly.
I'm not racist. I hate everyone equally.
Mate, let's talk about Dave Warner's TikToks.
Okay.
Now, initially I was like, well, what's going on here?
Oh, sorry, just to sound the Rogelinda 2 thing, obviously, I used to have a favourite clip, which was Mark Waugh taking down
what
Shane
now?
Or the hour of Steve Waugh run-outs. And, the people came out and defended Steve Waugh because he's an Anzac.
Yep.
and they watched that run-out video with their gin in their hand, their beer in their hand, and they had True Blue playing from
Matthew Hayden's version. Yeah,
had True Blue playing from John Williamson, and they were crying. And I know we're talking about UK stuff, but basically, I watched it too.
Yeah.
A lot of people wanted to come out and say, "Oh, actually, he was actually batting with a lower with the tail, so he's actually a really good batter with the tail." Listen, he barbecued heaps of guys.
He really did.
But here's another thing. Really good player,
really
good bat,
mm-hmm.
face of the 90s, mm. face of safety.
Yeah.
Both things can happen at the same time. I know things need to be binary, but Steve Waugh ran blokes out.
Have you got a favourite Steve Waugh run out? I do.
Yeah, tell us yours.
Mine is the Damien Martin run out at the Gabba when they're running for four. And Martin like gives up, and Steve Waugh's about an inch away from him, and Steve Waugh just keeps on running, just keeps going straight through the vulture end. And Damien Martin goes, "Oh, okay, I'm on about 40, but okay." And Harbhajan Singh throws in it, I think.
Yes, Harbhajan.
Harbhajan throws it, and it's just, that's my favourite one. Yeah. That's an absolute burning.
Waugh just does that thing where when he wants to burn you, he just
like a horse, he gets those blind and deaf,
and he just starts waddling down with those short steps. Now, for those upset and who are crying listening to True Blue, great batsman,
good
great
stick.
Captain. Yeah, real good stick, and the face of 90s and safety.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Just... is Steve Waugh not literally the embodiment of Sydney grade cricket,
late
90s and Australian success? Like, extremely good, top of his game.
No argument from me.
Probably a little bit selfish, you know, and that's why the Waugh thing is funny, because, like, while Waugh is, in many ways, a lot of things can be questioned, there's a kernel of truth to it. But the truth should be celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
When did selfishness, become a bad trait in cricket terms?
Every single person listening to this show is the most selfish person I've never met. All right, we'll speak about Warner's TikToks another time. We've got Tim Bresnan, we've got Jonathan Wilson, we've got Steve O'Keefe on the show, and then a hashtag AskTGC.
I refer to the great cricketer here, and I'll say, this will do a little bit early.
Okay, the man you've all been waiting for, Terry Genesetti bowled blancmanges. Well, Virat must hate them. One of the great contributors to TGC, Steve O'Keefe, how are you? And can I just preface by saying somebody wrote in and said, an off-contract sock on the grade cricketer, could there be a better guest? So welcome.
Oh, mate, thanks for keeping me relevant, boys. I really appreciate it. This is really big for me. This is the biggest thing I've had. I've had to sit in a room with four of the hierarchy from Cricket New South Wales and told I wasn't wanted. So I really needed this as a pep talk. So this is great. I appreciate it.
We sort of said before we chatted on the show, like, you know, we don't want this to be the analyst podcast. There's plenty of other casts out there that want to get into the nitty gritty of all this sort of stuff. So, like, guide us through it how you like. But for many people from the outside, Steve O'Keefe, hundreds of first class wickets, comfortably the best average of all spinners in the country, playing at first class level, and playing for the state that generally produces the most spinners for Australia, and doing the best there. Now no longer part of the setup, and you're sort of alluding to being told by four people you weren't wanted. Can you clear anything up for us there on how that went down?
It's for the first time in my career, it's funny. The whole process was very new to me. Geez, I can just go in and sign my own contract because, I'm taking 30 wickets at 20. No one else in the country is doing that, so I can write my own check. But when it was a text message I got, and you notice that the four names that were going to be included in your contract meeting were the CEO, head selector, head of cricket, and the coach. You know it's generally not going to be here for a good thing, and they don't disguise it too well. Cricket New South Wales, because they put all the people who were generally pretty close or close to losing their contract on the same day. They had their meeting on the same day. So word gets out. If you're on, I think it was in my case, May the 2nd, I was on there with about three or four other people who were about to lose their job. So the writing was on the wall. But one thing in the text that I did get from the head selector was at the end of it was that he really looked forward to chatting to me. And I think there was at some moment during the meeting halfway through that I stood up and said, what bleeping part of this are you really enjoying? It was a sad moment to have, but I did end up getting, I was dragged out by security kicking and screaming, saying I didn't really want to leave, but obviously I left a bigger man and was well-respected and very diplomatic. But it was a, yeah, it's a tough situation to be in, but I, you know, I've moved on. Things have moved on. My Xbox is moving on. I've started a wine journal. I've bought wine racks. I'm handling it as any good retired cricketer would. And chatting to you guys, more importantly.
Oh, yeah. Of course, still doing a service to the game. Yeah. It's funny with those like emails when there might be some bad news to communicate. Like the email subject line is like, meeting or like catch up.
Yeah.
Look, and they're literally trying to find something to say. Look forward to talking. And then you've obviously, you're like, okay, so there's something they're excited about talking about. I mean, didn't need that little slap on the way too, I suppose.
That was good. Yeah. It was a week of waiting. And it was sort of like a firing squad. You knew it was happening. And it was sort of COVID had sort of hit, or COVID had sort of hit. So there's four people in this massive square bedroom and people sort of yelling at you from 10 meters away, telling how you're not involved and not interested anymore or not part of the project going forward. So it made it even more awkward. But as I said, I think I was sort of a bit like John Farnham. I'd sort of been given one last chance for so many years in a row that, you know, I think I'd finally had the silver bullet and that was it. So, but I'm happily retired. I've got a bit of Sixers stuff going on. I'm going to go back and play a bit of club cricket, which I'm looking forward to. You know, like any respectable retired first-class cricketer, I sort of shot myself around to all the grade clubs knowing that I had a loss of income.
How'd you do that, by the way? Was it just like a pro forma email with all the clubs BCC'd? Or
did you forward, like, a hyperlink in My Cricket?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Just got all my My Cricket stats up since 2005 playing for the Fork, saying there's still plenty of value. But, yeah, no, I...
A couple of headlines from the Daily Mail.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. A couple of articles. Use it through Cameron Merchant's contract through Instagram to try and reach out to a few clubs. But I was, you know, I shot myself around. No one wanted me a bit like the Blues, so I'm going to just stick with the original plan of being loyal and giving back to Manly Cricket Club. Well, that's what I've told them anyway. So, yeah, so no bait, but I'm sticking with Manly. And to be honest, I'm looking forward to it. I'm not sure how... you know, a lot of these young crickets are really going to appreciate me taking out my bitterness and resentment of not playing first-class cricket on these young 19-year-old kids with big dreams and aspirations of playing and 36-year-old fat, bald, soccer first split, giving them a golf ball. But it's going to be interesting. I'm going to be coming in hot. It's going to be new for me, but I'm bloody excited about it.
It's going to be pretty exciting for the umpires when you hand them the baggy green left arm round, thanks. Yeah. At Manly Oval.
That's right. Yeah, I've got the taped up helmet and the Aussie cricket kit with the, with the international bag tags on them as well. So it's all there. I'm ready to go. Pre-season is set.
Self-awareness is great. So you're obviously aware of your role now as an ex-first-class cricketer coming in bitter, resentful, and an ex-test player. Can you just give us, for those listening out there in that very niche group, like how do you go about working over a young 19-year-old with aspirations or whatever? They might be in the academy or the second 11 or something. You might have heard their name. You pretend that you don't. Like, you say you've got 10 overs at them, you're bowling a spell. Like, how do you work yourself into that and make sure that they are crying at the end of that innings or the end of the day?
Shower stuff?
Well, I mean, it's all been a bit of a bluff from my point of view, you know, because I've got no really spinning major ball. It all has to come from the golf. So generally I start really personal. So if there's something personal about them, personal, I don't
start
like.
Personal. Start personal, go from there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, it's got nothing to do with cricket. It's something I've either heard on the grapevine. I like to do a bit of research as well. So I mean, there is a bit of science behind my sledging. So I will get a good look at the squad beforehand, go through, find any dirt, and generally start at the weakest point and work my way back from there. You know, if I haven't generally done my job and knocked them over in the first 10 balls, if they're out there long enough, that's probably the length of my depravity will extend. If they're out there batting long enough, they'll get more and more abuse, let's call it that, thrown their way until I finally get my victim and followed by a good send-off as well. So, yeah, it'll vary from player to player. But I'll wait until grade season starts before I start getting too in-depth. We can do that in the next podcast.
Well, it obviously worked for Virat, so I'm sure it's going to work against a 17-year-old.
It's good enough for Virat.
I got a question here, Sock, which was slid into the DMs. It's from Trent Heil. It says, "G'day, fellas. Got a nice TJC for Sock. Having been around the grey cricket scene for almost two decades, how has the post-game circuit evolved between the noughties and now, if at all? And if I may indulge, what is Sock's favourite circuit venue in the Sydney Test cricket catchment?"
It's a great question. because, you know, generally around Manly, I'm only allowed back into about two spots, and that's Woolworths and Coles, and that's before the sun goes down.
Not the Aldi anymore. Not after the Aldi incident.
The Aldi at the wharf. Yeah. So, give me a good rundown of the price of wine in the Aldi supermarket. Generally my go-to place to circuit these days. Mate, I tell you what, Trent, I remember Trent from playing back in my Hawkesbury days, and it was hard to go past the mean fiddler.
Yeah.
That was strong. That was strong.
Can you describe that for our maybe our UK fans?
I think that was Sydney's most dangerous pub at one point. Mm. It might not be anymore, but it was.
Yeah, it was. It was overtaken by the Stain, which had, I think, had the most reported assault.
Okay.
Something was like one a week going. But it was that they were going toe-to-toe at one stage. Yeah, the fiddler, just a big open pub, live music, four or five different sections with a bit of a nightclub, a dark, hazy room, and it was just a great place to go and get lost in. You could just bounce around like a pinball in there, you know, you're sort of walking around like Pac-Man, finding yourself either in the pokies, and then you'd be on the dance floor, then you'd be listening to live music, and then generally tossed out into the car park, trying to do some of your worst work out there. So yeah, it's just big enough that you could evade and hide and find new groups of people all throughout the night. Good fun. The Castle Hill Tavern 20 years ago was pretty good as well. I don't think that exists anymore, the nightclub section of that. But yeah, there's a bit of nostalgia for you. Yeah.
Sock, a cricket question. As you mentioned earlier, last year 30 at 20. We've since learned there's been a few movements in the Shield and stuff like that they're now like abandoning the Duke's ball, and then you know all the obsessives are getting together and saying, well, this would be better for spinners because the Duke's wasn't good for spin, and will the Kookaburra be better than stats suggest otherwise? And you know, can you just shed any light for us on whether the Duke's or the Kookaburra makes any difference to a spinner, and if anyone is going to take any wickets now that you're not there?
I generally found bowling with the Dukes probably better because the seam stayed harder, but the problem was because the Dukes swung all game, it was always, I mean, you just needed a scalpel to get the ball out of the hands of the quicks, you know, because they'd always, it just swung until the 80s over, and it's like, do we want to bowl, you know, wickets with a bit of grass on them? Generally, you know, that was the aim of most of wickets around the country, was to sort of suit the quicks, because we wanted to test them with the Dukes and the batters against the moving ball. So it's quite hard. So I think if they do go back to a Kooka, there's going to be that period of where it's softer and doesn't do much for longer. So I think it will lend itself to bowling a few more spinners. And, you know, well, bloody good. I hope so. You know, I'm sick and tired of watching around, you know, these state teams pick four quicks and then an all-rounder who's a medium pacer, and they're your five bowlers. And, you know, you're off spinners like Tommy Cooper or something from South Australia bowls three overs, bowls the graveyard shift from 70 to 80, and, you know, he's one for 30 off three, but he's done his job sort of thing. So I think he's, you know, I think it needs to move that way, and I am excited because I think there are some really good spinners. You know, Tommy Andrews has moved down to Hobart, which I think is a good move for him. So I think the best spinners are now sharing themselves out around the country. And I think they just need to get that opportunity to bowl more overs. And I think, like, racking off the Duke's ball, that's going to happen.
Do you have a view? Like, it's funny, there's been a lot of, you know, talk. I guess the biggest move in New South Wales, in cricket, has been Adam Zampa in New South Wales, mainly because he's going back to where he's from, and but also because I presume that because he's playing for New South Wales, people might think he might be the second in line to Lyon. He was at South Australia, and he wasn't that in red ball cricket for a while. Do you think moving states can change that for a player, or who do you think is the next couple in line to
going down that line?
To replace Lyon.
It's a tough one. I think it's a pretty even playing field, isn't it, at the moment? I mean, it's you look at someone like Swepson, who's probably number two, but it's hard to bowl spin at the Gabba. You know, like, it's again because of the conditions, and I think the front runner. I think whoever jumps out of the block, you know, well, in the start of the Shield season, is going to be the next in line. I think I've always said it. I think the talent's there. I mean, the guys like Agar, Swepson, Andrews, Zampa, they're all far more talented bowlers than I am. I think I was just presented with more opportunity to bowl more overs. Therefore, you get more comfortable. You upskill a bit quicker. So, you know, if you see guys like Agar bowling 30 overs a game, he's going to get better. And you're throwing his batting mix. So it's probably, you know, I'd still stick with, say, Swepson and Agar as the next two. And then I think down the line, you know, Zampa bowls well. Like, the guys, dominates Virat Kohli at international level. So it just, the mind boggles a little bit how he probably hasn't found that red ball success. And maybe the fresh start at New South Wales might be exactly what he needs. So he's still young, you know, he's under 30. He's got that sort of, you know, he can stick the chest out, which is hard for spinners to do. And he's already got that international success. So I'm kind of interested to see how he goes bowling, you know, on the slow wickets in Sydney. And, you know, if he starts out well, why can't he? We want to see a leggy, don't we? I've always wanted to see a leggy bowl. Unfortunately for everyone listening and, you know, for Australian cricket, it's been me who's been that second spinner. But I think it's about time we had a leggy who might be a little bit more exciting.
It's very magnanimous and a good endorsement of the Love Cafe.
Yeah. Like, I want to ask you, so like, how you reflect on your professional career now. Obviously, you know, Manly's paying you a six-figure sum anyway, but
correct.
You
know,
but someone did ask if this podcast was sponsored by the Stain, but you know, like in the game, you've literally achieved every basically dream that every young child would have done. Yeah, you know, growing up in Australia, you actually played Test matches, you played in the IPL, you played in the Big Bash. You know, do you wish you played more tests? Were there times when you were sort of looking at guys who were picked ahead of you and be like, I'm twice as good as this bloke? And if so, who?
I think when I look back on it, I'm like, you know, I probably could have had a bit more luck. And
yeah.
I remember someone asking this a while back when I was still playing. I was like, you know, I could have had a bit more luck, but, you know, I could have behaved better. But all in all, I really feel like I've got the most out of what I had. I think if I'd started, I played my first game and then there was a four-year gap between my first and my second. And I felt like if I'd played during that time, I wouldn't have been ready and I could have torched my opportunity. I think they picked me when I was ready at 25, 26. And I had a lot of luck along the way with good captaincy with Simon Caddick and Matthew Mott. So I don't think I would have had it in me to play the 70 or 80 tests that Gaz has played. I'd love to sit here and say that I would have, but he's bowled, you know, in tough conditions all around the world, had to learn his cricket at that sort of test level. You know, he had to learn first-class cricket at test level, and he's done it so well, you know, and he's only getting better. So I think 9 tests is about right. You know, some might say it's 9 too many. I'll say it's probably about bang on. If you get me with a few sherbets in me, I'll certainly tell you that I should have played 90. But I think all in all, looking back, I'm pretty happy with it. You know, I've been, as you said, I've been able to play T20 cricket. I've travelled the world. I've met some bloody interesting, good people. And
thanks, mate.
I don't look back with the resentment. You know, there's certainly been some tough days in the last couple of months. But, you know, overall, I feel pretty, I'm pretty lucky. And I think that's the way I kind of look at it.
Oh, mate, you know, it's not over because you still got to play for Manly, but, you know, we are...
Actually, Hawkesbury away first round.
Hawkesbury, tough place to land. But, no, I mean, I think we speak on behalf of a lot of our listeners who have loved your career and loved the character that you've brought to it. So on behalf of them, and I will speak for them against their will, congratulations on a great first-class career. And you never know, you know, you might just be taking bagfuls against Campbelltown and all of a sudden no one's doing well at first-class level. And well, but, you know, maybe Steve Smith's captain and he just brings you along with him. You know,
A second live show for the great cricketer.
We'll have to wait and see. I think, I am excited. I mean, I did my first clubman's duty on the weekend for Manly. They're like, oh, can you come down and help us remove this old cover? And I felt like it was going to be like about a 5-minute job because we're taking to the tip. Turns out this thing had been there since about 1930, and the tree that's at Manly Oval near the scoreboard had actually grown its roots over it. So there's about 6 of us with our shirts off with pickaxes and shovels. Digging up a tree and removing an old cover, and I'm like, this has really just brought me back down to earth.
This is how it ends.
It's humbling.
Yeah. So proper.
We all end up under the earth, mate.
Yeah, that's right.
It's deep.
That's how I've started my grade season. So I am looking forward to giving back. That's the way that I'm looking at it. You know, Manly will be the tool for that. It's a bloody good place to play a bit of club cricket. And I'm, for as long as my body will hold out, I'll hang around there.
Mm. Oh, nice little disclaimer at the end. Okay, three rounds or only play when there's a 3K radius from your house.
Yeah, just play the home games.
Nice one.
I've got Hawkesbury as well. Mum's still living out at Richmond, so I do have an excuse and a bet out that way. So that's not off limits anymore. It used to be, but I'll be hitting mum and dad up for a bed and breakfast on the way trip to Hawkesbury for sure.
Steve O'Keefe, thanks for joining us. Thanks a million.
Good on you, man. Thank you.
Guys, we're just going to introduce ourselves to the morning. It's a great opportunity to bring some connection to your breathing.
Ladies and gentlemen, please file the following guest down as one frighteningly above our humble station. He'll be known to many of you as a football writer, award-winning author, and editor of The Blizzard. But here goes, and I listen to him on The Guardian Football Weekly, and I'm pretty sure cricket might be his favourite sport. Jonathan Wilson, it's a great pleasure to have you on The Grade Cricketer.
Oh, it's a great pleasure to be with you.
Is it though? Yeah. Anyway, yeah. let me start, Jonathan. Can you take us into the hearts and minds of club cricketers across England? First, the pain at not being able to play in the time of coronavirus, and the pleasure after Boris's recent, let's say, 180 and announcement that cricket is back on.
Mm. Well, from a personal point of view, this has been timed absolutely perfectly. In that I had surgery on my shoulder last June. I've been really struggling with it. And I'm due to bowl my first ball in the net tomorrow. So I've been working on the gym, but I haven't actually had a ball. I haven't actually tried to bowl at 22 yards. So being able to then play my first game 4 days after that, it really couldn't have been timed any better. I think it has been a huge amount of frustration, particularly because it became apparent quite early that cricket is relatively safe. And you know, we saw in the UK that basketball, for instance, came back. You sort of think, well, how on earth is basketball safe and cricket not? You know, if it's contact with the ball, you obviously touch the ball a lot more playing basketball than you do cricket. The whole thing seems to have been a mess. I mean, I think the opinion of our criticism, possibly a bit unfairly, that people haven't quite realised what they were doing behind the scenes, and maybe the ECB could have presented that a bit better. But I heard 2 weeks gone. You know, basically the league had asked for a 3 week warning to get the pitch and everything ready. Mm-hmm. And they got that ready to start this weekend coming up. So I heard this 2 weeks ago, and there was various sort of documents that were being flagged about that, you know, as journalists, you see that maybe other punters wouldn't see. And it all seemed to be totally sort of reasonable and logical, and I was sort of ready to come back, you know, this weekend. And I played for four different teams. I told the lads in all the four teams, you know, I think we're back this weekend. And then Johnson said this ridiculous thing about the ball being a natural vector of disease. So just by chance, the specialist I've been seeing about my shoulder, I won't identify him, but he works for one of the county sides, and he's on some sort of government cross sport advisory body. And so I said to him, you know, what's going on with this? You know, how is basketball safe and cricket not? And he said, well, it's nonsense. The ECB have done their own tests on balls. And essentially, they've infected the balls deliberately. I think they've done 24 balls and then, you know, left them out in the sun. And within 2 minutes, they were safe. I mean, I may be slightly misrepresenting the science there, but essentially they had done tests and had found that the chance of a ball being a vector of disease was utterly minimal. And then, you know, last week we were hoping for it. And Johnson said this thing on the radio about, oh, it's all about teas, it's all about changing rooms. So you don't have to have teas, you don't have to have changing rooms. Mm. We sort of understood that we wouldn't be able to do them. And then, you know, somebody obviously had a word to him that day in the House of Commons that afternoon. He did another U-turn and said, yeah, it's back. And so everybody's suddenly scrambling around trying to rearrange matches that were cancelled and get the league going again.
There's a great piece that you've written in the Night Watchman. It's a wonderful kind of quarterly put out by Wisden. For those who are listening, recently Jonathan called you your mam and Lance Gibbs. And it's about, I won't give it away, but it's about, as you describe, a tie to Sunderland and home. Can you just give us a little kind of taster of what that piece is about? Because it's an epic article. I'd encourage anyone who does get the Night Watchman to read it. But yeah, sort of what inspired that and what's it about?
Yeah, I think it's the most unusual piece I've ever written. Yeah, I think I've ever written anything remotely like that. So it began in 2010, my dad was very ill, was coming to the end of his life up in Sunderland, which is where I'm from. My mum had a hip replacement, so she needed looking after. So I was up in Sunderland looking after her, going to visit my dad. And I was also just in commission to write a book on Brian Clough, the football manager, who played for Sunderland for two seasons, suffered his career-ending injury in Sunderland. So I was doing some research on that, going through old newspapers. Just literally just turning page after page, trying to find some new details about Clough. I figure he's been written about an enormous amount. And got into the cricket reports, the club cricket reports in the summer, and found this reference to Lance Gibbs playing for Whitburn. Now, Whitburn's my local village, just in the north edge of Sunderland. Very small place. This was the first place I ever watched cricket. The ground is beautiful, right on the cliff top, like the wind lashes across it. Mm. And it just makes no sense. I mean, the idea of Lance Gibbs playing there, even knowing that a lot of West Indies players from that period played in the local leagues in England, that was the only way they could really sort of generate an income. But still, this is it's a tiny village, and Lance Gibbs at the time was the best spin bowler in the world.
309 test wickets.
He was signed, let me get this right, the autumn of 61, they signed him to come over in 62. And that winter was when the English winter, he demolished India. And that was what really sort of elevated him. And then the following winter was the West Indies Tour of Australia, the tie test and all that. Not that he played in tie test, but he took a hat-trick in that series, didn't he?
I'm just looking at it. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Popped up the tail. He's absolutely at the peak of his powers. And there he is playing for this tiny club who just finished bottom of the Durham Senior League. So I just thought, this is an incredible... ridiculous. What was he doing there? And how is this not really well known?
Yeah.
And so I went home to my mum and said, Lance Gibbs played for Whitburn. And she went, oh, yeah, we used to go and watch him. And she sort of thought of it. She went, I think he's the first black man I ever saw. And you sort of think, this is an incredible story. It's a story of immigration. It's a story of, there's a northeast changing. The reason he played for them was the grounds being owned by sort of the local landowners, Hedrick Williamson, pretty much all the land in that area of Northumberland was owned by the family. And they set up the club in the mid-19th century. And so, they controlled the whole thing for well over 100 years. Mm. And then, the family dwindled. I think it was the 11th baronet decided, he was going to sell up. And he sold to a bloke called Laurie Evans, who's a local sort of construction magnate, who was also the vice chairman of Sunderland Football Club. And the reason he bought it was he wanted to knock down the old sort of manor house and build flats, which is right next to the ground. And the ground was protected in law. The cricket had to be played there. And he realised, he didn't know anything about cricket, but he realised that the way to sort of get the village on side with his plans to get the planning permission through was to invest in the cricket club. So he rebuilt the pavilion. The pavilion is still there today. And he sort of went into the AGM in the September 61, with the bottom of the senior league, said, right, this cannot happen again. How do we win the league? And the other directors are sort of like, well, we haven't had a professional for 3 years. I guess we could get a professional, thinking that he would sort of say, well, okay, we'll get one of these people who used to play for an English county. This is when Durham was still a minor county. Who are in their 30s and coming to the end of their career. And he went, well, who's the best player in the world? And they went, well, we know that Lance Gibbs, who was playing for Burnley, we know that his contract's up. And he went, well, how much will he cost? And he went, well, I don't know, £1,000 for the summer? And he said, well, yeah, fine, we'll just get him. And so Lance Gibbs turns up the following April and proceeds to take over 100 wickets at 7 and a bit.
Oh, my God.
So anyway, that's the sort of cricket side of it. And I chased down a few people who played with and against him, and then sort of, because I had nowhere sort of to put it, the piece sort of ran out of steam. And then last year, my mum died in October, and I was back up in Sunderland sort of dealing with that and spending her last few days with her. I finally sort of chased it down. And so the piece kind of, I sort of came to this realisation that I could only finish the piece when my nana died. The sort of the two things were sort of linked. And so it became a piece. It's about landscape. It's about Sunderland. It's about Whitburn. And it's about my family. And it's about the connection you have to home. Mm. I sort of put off speaking for landscapes because I wanted to wait until I knew exactly what I wanted to ask him, which was a stupid thing to do because if I'd spoken to him in 2010, he'd have been in his mid-70s, now in his mid-80s. His memory is, I mean, you know, he's still very sharp, but his memory is starting to go. And anyway, why would he remember the three seasons he spent in Whitburn beyond sort of the generalities of, you know, the other players? And yeah, he's not going to remember specific games or anything.
100 wickets at seven, though. I'd remember every single one.
Well, did you remember when he took 4-30 against Sean Harbour? No, sorry. spoke to him earlier this year, and that was sort of the impetus to get the piece finally finished. Mm. And I ended up finishing it in lockdown when I had a bit of time. Mm. Finally got it wrapped up. Mm.
Well, there's plenty of people who may again be in lockdown in Australia. So yeah. Grab The Night Watchman and give that a read. It is an epic piece. It's an amazing piece. So beautifully written. Jonathan Wilson, I can't believe I've been saying your name on this humble show, but thank you so much for joining us, and we hope to catch you through the UK summer.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to be back.
I guess me just whispering in their ear saying, get rarer.
He goes, of course, we have some wonderful friends.
Why do you sound like that?
That's good. These ads are getting weirder and wilder.
Yeah. Oh, it's an ad, is it? No, I just want to talk about Budgie Smuggler. Okay, our wonderful friends at BudgieSmugglerUK.com. Yep. Custom Smugglers, all the rage this UK summer, he goes. Now, there's an excellent summer going on in the UK as far as weather is concerned.
Sure.
Perhaps not so much in terms of the mobility, let's just say, of humans.
Well,
but that's understandable. But pubs are open again.
Yeah.
And, you know, so is the temptation, I suppose, to go to the beach, stay a bit distant from people if possible. And if you are going to do that, if you are going to go to water, get yourself some custom Budgie Smugglers. Now, what are the sorts of newsworthy things you might put on those smugglers' higos? For example, the Prime Minister himself described the cricket ball as a natural vector of disease.
Natural vector of
disease. Not 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
As we go to air.
Yes.
I learn about vectors in school, something to do with lines and whatnot.
Most of the people that I played with were a vector of disease in some capacity.
Grade cricket is a natural vector of disease, which is now the synergy is coming together, and that's the title of this show.
Here we go.
A natural vector of disease. So how about you consider a cricket ball on your Budgie Smugglers and some words to the effect of, this is a natural vector of disease. Maybe leave the cricket ball off it and people can be left with their own imagination about what you're speaking about. Any ideas yourself?
True hero of this COVID-19 situation, Sam, is, Roblinda 2 has been idolised across the world.
And rightly so.
I saw NASA Hussain got involved with, I think he posted, one of my great Roblinda 2 clips is NASA Hussain, there's a ball, he's in the West Indies, and the ball literally rolls and the disappointment on his face is just so relatable. Mm. I think it's the West Indies, might be Pakistan. Anyway, Roblinda 2 should be celebrated for bringing this into light. All these clips of the 90s and the 80s and the 70s and the noughties, all of it, just all together, should be celebrated by wearing custom smugglers. I'm not sure what the legalities of that, using someone's likeness from the internet, but...
Well, I'm sure Roblinda 2 is all across issues of copyright and stuff like that.
Point.
So
good
I doubt point. He'd have many oppositions to it. But I'd certainly endorse a Roblinda 2 line of smugglers,
okay.
Really.
Glad
and that's something
that
for Lynn to
listen
to. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
BudgieSmugglerUK.com. Okay. It's the guy.
No,
oh, shit.
Good. Perfect.
Not again.
Perfect. No, okay,
we weren't recording. Okay. Recording now. Okay. It's the guy who in 2006 told Steve Smith he wasn't good enough for Yorkshire and instead gave him some kit and later on was in the team that destroyed Australia in 2010 or whenever. In the meantime, he's amassed a sterling international and first-class career, appeared at two Grade Cricketer live shows in the UK, and he's apparently about to change clubs, or maybe he has changed clubs. He's our friend, he's your friend, Tim Bresnan. Welcome to your third appearance on this podcast. How's things?
Yeah, good. Do I get a match ball now for that third appearance?
Definitely not.
In footy, when you score a hat trick, you get to keep the match ball.
Yeah, we play that game here too. But
Yeah, all right, fair enough. It's not even like an ask TG, hashtag ask TGC, like a
a ball, like anything like that. No, I feel as though the comment before we actually started recording was a lot better than this.
It's all good. It's all good. Let's. I mean, Tim, the main news with you is that
big news.
You've moved clubs, from Yorkshire to Warwickshire. A lot of people listening to this show will have changed clubs before. I mean, can you confirm, even at that high profile level, that it's really just the same people in different kit?
Pretty much. Yeah. No, it's good. But, yeah, I don't really know how to answer your question, to be honest. Obviously,
has someone got a gun to the back of your head?
Yeah. They've all got different names and slightly different faces, but, yeah, it's same people in different kit. We're all cricketers, aren't we?
Well, do you know many of the guys?
What is it my old coach used to say? That we all piss in the same pot. I think that's what you're referring to.
I mean, do you know many of the guys at Warwickshire? Yeah. Like Wokes, Bell, you know, Dom Sibley. Basically, all the guys play for England. Is that who you're talking to?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, they're all the way with England at the minute. But obviously, I know Belly, and there's a few lads signed from Yorkshire over the last sort of 3 or 4 years. So I know those guys as well. And then, yeah, I've played against these guys for a while. No, most of them. Mm. Yeah, it's all good.
How do you play it, like, socially?
It's a bit weird, you know. You just got to, you know, when you usually sort of big peacock out here at a club, and you know your sort of status, but then coming into a different team, you have to figure out where you fit in the hierarchy of peacocks.
And where do
alphas,
you fit?
I suppose you might. Well, I don't know. To be honest, I'm still figuring it out. I've been here half an hour.
Because you spent, was it 19 years, Brez? 19 years at Yorkshire, is that right?
19 years.
19 years. And then you obviously played
for
England.
I'm probably going down a lot in everyone's estimations because I've only been half an hour, but now I'm sat out the way on the phone to you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not a great look, is it, really?
Well,
but we're all good. We're all good. Once I tell them that it's the great cricketer, they'll be like, "Oh shit!" Tell them I said love and all that sort of stuff.
Almost definitely.
Yeah.
I had a question come in from a chap named Dale Tower. I think his name is. Let me just pull up here, Brez. And it's about your time at Yorkshire because it's obviously worth celebrating. Yeah. But he said, "Message for Tim Brez." Sad to see him leaving Yorkshire. The Otley Run is 16 bars over 1.5 miles in Leeds. Which teammate performed the best over this elite cricketing venue?
Well, it's I think it's 19 bars.
19. Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. We've all completed it. All the Yorkshire boys completed it on end of season 1 year.
And what period of time are we looking at? 19 bars.
19 bars. Well, we started at midday.
Yeah.
Obviously ran it as a bit of a fines do.
Yeah.
And we finished about 2 a.m.
Yeah, not bad.
So
14
session.
Hours. That's a decent session. Just elite cricketers.
Good session, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And elite drinkers at the end of the season, aren't we?
Love talking to you.
It's been half an hour.
I love it. Yeah. And also, Jack wrote in, he says, does Tim remember whacking me in the cock for buying Sam Booker instead of tequila in the Ark Headingley in 2012?
Yeah. Almost certainly remember that.
Why did you do that?
What an asshole Jack was.
I asked for tequila.
Yeah, I asked for tequila and he bought Sam Booker.
There's obviously, like, you've moved clubs, Brez, just going back to that, but you've got a pretty stellar international career, mate. Like, how many tests did you win in a row when you first joined the England team? Was it like, it's like 12 or 13, isn't it, your first matches?
Yeah, 12 or 13.
Yeah. Like you,
it's one behind Gilly, so if I Google whatever Gilly got, and I got one left.
Okay. Like,
sorry, Belly, it's the Great Cricket Podcast. Do you want to have a chat? Yeah, exactly. He just said, the what?
Can you ask him what the likelihood is of him coming on the show next week?
Belly, what's the likelihood of you going on the show next week? He's just running off to do his sprints, mate.
So
not,
maybe.
Not the first player who's run away from that request in England.
Yeah.
I think he'll be harder than getting Langer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
We're going to ask.
Yeah.
Best, though, won't do it.
Yeah. Well, it's just three mates having a chat again.
Yeah.
Boys, I don't want to cut this short, but I'm really going to have to go. Like, they're literally starting the next session of sprints. So
I'm just doing sprints? At 35?
Yeah. I've got to go do sprints.
Well, mate, look after yourself.
Sprints, mate.
Don't worry about your hamstrings.
Right. I'll ring you back.
It's all good, mate. It's all good.
Is that going to work?
No, it's perfect.
I'll be done in 10 minutes.
No, it's done well.
Right, I'll be done in 15 minutes. I'll be done.
Don't say we don't bring you close back to things in the grade cricket.
Love you, Brez.
Love you, mate.
Lots of laughs as well.
I love the Twitter account. It's great. I follow it a great deal, and even while I understand not even half of it, I still love it.
What perfect endorsement could you have?
Pezza, hashtag AskTDC. It's been a minute since we've gone through the DMs properly and scrolled through and had a look, and there's a lot in there.
And thank you.
A lot of people who have just been locked up.
Yeah.
Had a lot of weird thoughts.
Yeah.
A lot of weird thoughts.
I thought there'd be a lot of that. Like, I think when the tweet was put out, it was some invitation to express what was in the psyche, because there's no more dysfunctional psyche than that of a locked up club cricketer.
Exactly.
Particularly those who are England based. With respect.
Exactly. Well, we've got... How many? We've got five here.
Something like that. We'll see.
We'll see how it goes. All right, James Worthington writes in. I'm not sure if I should have said his name, because he starts off saying, "Hey, fellas, I'm the worm. I moved to New South Wales for university going down from Queensland. I met this bird and she was exactly what I needed in my life. Problem." Can you describe what's that?
Oh, yeah. Problem. You've got a problem.
Problem. Okay. "I had a girlfriend back at home and I was just days away from breaking up with her at a Gatho one night, this chick, let's call her Emily, wanted to get busy. However, I stayed loyal, and God, I wish I didn't. Forced back home due to COVID, my girlfriend dumped me instantly. I tried my best to stay in contact with Emily back at uni. However, I felt she beginning to lose interest. Now she is seeing someone, and ultimately he has the same name as I do. Let's call him James. It's an old case of should've, would've, could've, but I didn't. Sad times. How do I get over this? I can't tell her about my cricketing ability because ultimately over three seasons I have a high score of 16, batting at 9, without ever taking a wicket. Any advice would be much appreciated. Cheers, the worm."
Okay, James, a few things, brother. Commiserations, yeah, obviously, on that's possibly love lost. Congratulations on staying loyal. I think you did the right thing there, although it didn't pay off for you in this circumstance.
Yep.
So maybe the lesson is... trust your instincts a little bit more, and maybe a little bit more judgment would have had you be somewhat aware that you're about to get horrifically dumped. Also, just a bit of grammar, mate, and some spelling stuff, just like beginning to lose interest. Just looking that on the page looks very ugly.
Yeah.
And then also at the end you say any advice would be much appreciated, and advice is in a capital A, and it just looks quite poor. You've moved to New South Wales for university, so you are capable of tertiary education. So just step up in that respect, and I think most things will flow from there.
I hope his DMs to Emily are better written.
Yeah, just go over it once or twice.
The worm, appreciate the question. Mate, you just got to stay on the radar. That's your play. Yeah. That's your play. Emily, you know, if you're a university student, what happens is people get into their first like long-term relationships from the age of like 18 and 22, 23, then they break up. Just stay on the radar, brother. You stay on the radar. You'll pop up again. You'll see Emily again.
Why haven't you blinked in the last 60 seconds?
Move on.
Graham Fox writes in, and we need to read the email title here.
Yeah.
Email title is, "Pour away the ocean and sweep up the wood, for nothing now can ever come to any good."
Fuck me.
"Dear AskTGC, I write in solemn contemplation of a memory repressed, only brought back up due to the return of club cricket and the reminiscing that comes with it. I've all but managed to remove playing cricket from my life. I have a career now, friends that aren't 40-year-old divorcees." Divorcees. "Saturdays are now semi-enjoyable, but every now and then I'm pulled back in, and this story is usually at the forefront of my mind."
You have a story at the forefront of your mind. Never every time
leaves.
You come
fucking play never
cricket.
Leaves.
Yeah, go yeah. to play cricket. I've just got this story. Oh, God, man. My dad played county cricket for most of his career and then switched to proing at our local club. Mm-hmm. I was brought up around the club and made my first team debut at the tender age of 15. Right. Having already lived 15 years in my dad's shadow, our nicknames respectively being Foxy and Fox Cub, ridiculous I know, I was excited to break out and become my own person. That was not to be. In true Saturday fashion, a hangover dropout calls in, and my dad is the only person at the club able to play. Despite his semi-retirement, he ends up coming on as a third change with the opposition on a fuck ton for not many down. Before he begins his pace from two-step run-up, he pulls me in at silly mid-off. I ask for a helmet. I am refused. The tension mounts.
What?
First ball, batsman creams it. It whizzes past my ear, giving me tinnitus. I ask for a helmet again. Calls from other fielders. I'll just nip and get one. Again, my dad refuses. He bangs in the next ball and it gets big on the batsman. He loops it straight to me at silly mid-off, who makes no mistake. A catch in my first game. I was ecstatic until I hear behind me the words that will haunt me forever. And that's why you listen to your fucking daddy.
Jesus.
Laughter in the huddle rings out. My mum would later cry as she realises the scorebook reads, Caught Fox, Bold Fox, and we went on to win relatively comfortably. But I never recovered from this and hear those words every time a catch comes my way, every time the squash is too weak, every time I open my eyes. My question arising from it is this. Does Ollie Pope's subpar rig and small arms preclude him from a regular test spot, Fox Cub?
I don't like the nickname Fox Cub. It's too, like, call him Cubby or, I don't know.
It's just lazy. Fox Cub.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, he has signaled that it's ridiculous.
His dad's called Fox. So what about like pup?
What about his dad, the bowler, refusing him a helmet? You don't fucking need a helmet for me, kid.
Yeah. It must have been a scenario where the father felt that it brought shame upon his name and family that his son would want to protect his head from a cricket ball. Do you know what I mean? Like that level of like psychotically misguided macho.
Yeah, yeah. It's the same as like when a bowler who thinks he's quick and the keeper comes up to the stumps.
Yeah.
You fucking get back.
Yeah.
You get way back on the edge of the ring for me. It's the same, similar. Like,
risking major dental procedures that will last a lifetime.
How submissive is Fox Cub that he has just accepted that his father has denied him the right to protect his human head?
Mm. Oh, well, he's his son. The son is he's trying to learn from the father, though. You know what I mean? You don't want me to wear a helmet? All right, Dad, no worries. We're a team. You're the big boss around town. Yeah, I've got tinnitus, but must protect. Sort of family stature.
How about his dad saying, listen to your fucking daddy? Oh. That is tough
just
to recover
daddy
from.
In that, just daddy. Getting that DY at the end of it as well.
Exactly, yeah. Ollie Pope, I like Ollie Pope. Flamboyant.
Yeah.
But yeah, the rig's an issue.
There's a lot of love for Ollie Pope, and he strikes me as a really cool, like quintessential English batsman. Mm-hmm. He's elegant, he's crisp, he's got boyish looks. He's that real sort of preppy style player, but apparently a very good one who will no doubt destroy us down the track.
Well, he reminds me of Ian Bell, who'll be on the show next week. We came out because that's not
the what?
It's not a thing. Yeah, exactly. Cody Campbell says, "How you going, boys? I may have created a monster during lockdown in South Africa. I stayed with my best mate to pass the time. We each chose a series to watch. I chose the Test for obvious reasons that include but not limited Smith being the second coming of Christ, the only time Gaz has made a mistake in Test cricket, and JL proving most of us wrong about his yoga cricket culture. Anyway." My mate's gone from not giving a shit about cricket to shadow batting down the passage, shouting, how's that, every time he catches something, and watching the entire collection of cricket videos on YouTube. My hashtag RCGC is, have I been Alfred? I was the cricket bloke in the house. I have no identity. My shadow batting has lost its energy. I don't even announce, ooh, that's a good area to things unrelated to cricket. How do I go back on top? How do I get back on top? Is it time to suggest a game of backyard cricket and bounce the shit out of him? Who am I?
Yeah, okay, Cody. Okay.
What's his identity, bro?
Okay, Cody, this is a gift. You need to understand this.
Okay.
There's no greater identity from a cricketing perspective to be a superior player who cares less
about
the game.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to any higher grade player.
Any pro's ever been on this podcast.
All you learn is that they want to talk less about cricket than you. In that way, in a beautiful kind of mesmeric, magical way, what they're saying is that, like, I'm defeating you in all aspects of cricket.
Mm-hmm.
I'm better than you at the game. I care the least about the game. Now, you think that you're being alphaed by someone who likes cricket more than you. You got that the wrong way around.
Mm-hmm. Nothing less alpha.
Nothing less alpha than being outwardly passionate about cricket.
Mm. Look at Zampa. Hates cricket. But also moving states to try and play cricket.
Exactly. For Australia in Red Bull.
Yeah.
But knocks over Kohli.
Yeah.
Record amount of times or whatever it
whatever,
is.
Whatever the fuck he's done.
So it's an actual gift, and really you should be thanking your friend. Mm. You should be giving them gifts. You should be buying them beers. You should be encouraging this behaviour as much as possible.
Mm.
And everything you do can now just be nonchalant, understated.
If Cody's better.
If Cody's better. And just wait for the bouncing the shit out of him stuff. Wait a couple of months or whatever. Encourage the guy's enjoyment of the game and then spring it upon him at a psychotic time.
His South African friend, I presume he's South African friend because they were in South Africa. I presume Cody's Australian. And it hasn't said that, but I just presume that that's the case. So they're watching the test, which starts with sandpaper. Bold move. And also, I'm confused whether
they might be South African.
They're all South African?
Or just during lockdown in South Africa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just letting us know where he is, yeah.
Anyway, it's unusual. There's the dynamic there that I haven't brought that up.
If you've got a friend who's more passionate than you about cricket and is evangelically like newly attached to cricket, that you have not been alphaed in any way.
Yeah, you should bully him.
He's actually beat it himself. Samantha Daly writes in, my hashtag AskTGC. Hi lads, pretty stoked that the cast is back. Thank you. Missed it a lot. I am a huge cricket nuffy despite never actually having played a game, which is a topic of conversation within my friend groups. Mm-hmm. But my question is, what is the most alpha emoji? In the day and age where more is said in emojis than actual words, what emoji can I use to alpha myself or to champ/belittle someone else? Thanks, lads. Sam.
It's got to be one of the face ones.
Yeah, I got a view.
You know on Facebook, okay, you tell me your view.
The sports smile. So just type in smirk. Mm. It's the one just with the side smile. All the time, because as we've always said, like it's a sports smile because only one cheek is needed. You know, everything is understated, as we were saying beforehand. If you look through any photos of sports people trying to smile, they never crease both sides of their cheeks.
Yeah.
It's only ever one cheek, because one cheek will do, and one cheek's all you need to convey the joy of that, you know, and the emotion of joy.
What do you type in? Steve Waugh.
Exactly. Type in Wayne Bennett.
Tugger.
Yeah, it can go too far because you can look like you've had a stroke when you just only crease one side of your mouth when you're smiling. But there's plenty of men sportsmen who like to do that to smile. It's just like, brother, just give us both sides of the mouth, you know?
Give us
both creases, you know?
Samantha has the advantage of, like, who's she texting?
Her friends.
Yeah, okay. Because if, like, because there's texted people before and they start sending, like, random emojis, and I spend heaps of time thinking about why there's something the lettuce leaf. What the fuck does that mean?
What?
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Or like
you
a dumpling.
Would know.
What about, I was going to say on Facebook, you know how they've introduced the care one? Like if that was in, you just start sending that out.
Yeah.
Oh, I think there's a play there.
Yeah, like an alpha play.
Mm. There's not really, because emoji and alphadom is an oxymoron. Not really, like no alpha is really floating out heaps of emojis in a text.
Probably if just somebody is like writing something serious to you and you just go back with the laugh and the tears emoji.
What about just the thumbs up?
Yeah.
You send someone a long text, and they give you a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Like literally Breslin did before.
Yep.
That's okay.
Yep.
Okay, you're better than me.
Yep.
Yeah. Last one, Pez. Rob Kingston, dear great cricketers, there is a man who I play cricket with.
Normal.
He's good looking. He's happily married to a beautiful woman with whom he has two perfect little kids. He has a directorial role at a large charity, which, as far as I can tell, pays him well and takes him all over the world on fulfilling missions. He's a superb batsman and he's a really nice bloke. Not in that fake and superficial way that a lot of successful people are, but genuinely and authentically friendly and interested in people.
So far, so good.
Yeah,
there's no twist to
what's
this.
Coming around the corner, yeah.
What is it, dolls?
Yeah. His question is, what's wrong with Ollie Pope's rig? My teammates and I hate him more than anyone in the world. There it is. And have been desperately searching for a flaw we can exploit to undermine him and therefore feel better about ourselves. You can imagine my excitement then when he presented a gilt-edged opportunity to sledge the hell out of him. I texted my mate giddy with anticipation. Mate, have you seen his latest Instagram story? He's only bought a bloody MRF. What a knob. Does he think he's fucking Brian Lara or something? So what, came the reply. My friend clearly didn't see the potential here. And so I appeal to TGC, a higher cricketing authority, to confirm my assertion that a club cricketer using an MRF is the most beta thing ever, and I'm morally superior to this man for staying in my fucking lane and using a Grey Nichols. Come on, back me up here, fellas. All the best, Rob. Stick chat.
Yeah, Rob, I think it's time to stand down, brother. Guilt-edged opportunity? Just a wonderful bloke, uses MRF, the same bat as even Steve Waugh used, who we've been talking about.
Tendulkar.
Yeah. Oh, is that a thing? You're not allowed to use bats that are also used by other good players?
Mate, I agree with Rob. MRF is yuck.
It's yuck, but it doesn't make him a knob. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, that's a stylistic thing.
I don't think it's the thing.
Right.
I don't think it's the thing.
You think he's got him here now?
I think you've got to go through his financials or something to really, yeah. really crack the code.
Yeah.
Go through his DMs. Who's he messaging? That's your I don't think it's the MRF stick.
How do you get under the skin of someone socially? You know what I mean. I'm not saying like ghosting them or anything, but like you look at their who they're following and stuff. You just they're like, oh, okay, that looks like a porn bot.
Instagram. Well, this might be just an Australian thing, but they've taken away the feed where you can see what other people are liking. So, like for instance, Warn, famous for liking a lot of Instagram models' photos and stuff. Just keep it on the radar there. Yeah. Just like James should be doing with Emily. Maybe that's a play, social media presence. I don't think it's an MRF, though. Just, I agree with Rob. MRF is a bit yuck.
Yeah. But so it's something. But
if
it's
he's
not
a fucking great batsman, then that's... Because like Ian Bell uses that of that. So Ian Bell's... Yeah. He'd be up there one of the best-looking players in the history of the game.
I think also, Rob, please know that like when you're dealing with someone who is as perfect as you think, as you see this guy as being, happily married, beautiful woman, perfect little kids, directorial role, this is it. Like, when you meet guys on the circuit or whatever, and, you know, I know he goes, you like to meet guys on the circuit. Sorry.
I meet a lot of people, yeah.
You want him to be 8 out of 10. But when you start, you know, if you've got a friend like a girl and you meet the new partner, the bloke, and he's a bit, 9.5 out of 10, 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
You sort of get a bit worried. You're like, no one's just give us a bit of vulnerability. Give us a little bit of roughness around the edges, just so I can just feel safe and we can just be operating as a slight. Yeah. We're not saying we all need to be loose units, but don't present as 9.5, 10 out of 10. It's just a bit of a warning sign that there's something deeper going on.
I've got a mate who is similar to that. Really good athlete. Really high-paying job, wonderful wife and kids. No edge to him.
Yeah.
Not a great beer.
Yeah, but there has to. Yeah, not a good beer.
Lovely guy. Uh-huh. Not my first go-to for a beer.
Right.
And so I rank everyone on the viability of having a schooner with them or a pint.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think know that, Rob. Be patient. It'll come. I think if someone's 9.5, 10 out of 10, it'll come. And it'll be something big and something you actually can't write publicly, probably.
In which case, let us come back to us then.
Let us know.
Yeah. If he puts his MRF through his Ferrari or something.
Something will happen. Someone will say something from the opposition or something. It'll unravel if he's 9.5 out of 10.
Let's be honest. He's playing club cricket. He's got something wrong with him.
Good point.
Thanks as ever for listening to the Grey Cricketer podcast on this enormous show. It's great to be back. It's been a few weeks. It's been a hot minute since we've been around. Jonathan Wilson, Tim Bresnan. Before I had to do some sprints. Ian Bell, briefly. We can probably boost the audio there. And who else? Oh, that's
Steve,
right.
O'Keefe.
Steve O'Keefe. England West Indies coming up this week. It's great to have the sport back. Great to have the cricket back. It's great to be back talking to you guys again. See you next week.
Yeah. Look good, play good, feel good.